Yeah, well, the thing is that, like, the game of telephone, it increased the story. There's no time at all. The scuttlebutt has it where I'm making $5,000, and I only have to touch a piece of wood. It has value somehow or another, you know. So now I can't get anything because they're not going to sell me nothing for no $2. Everything's all $50. So I said, shoot, you know, so I left, and I went down to San Francisco, and I went across the San Francisco Bridge towards San Diego again. You know, I go down there, and I stay for a couple weeks or whatever, and I'm trying to recoup and trying to figure out what I'm going to do next. And I deliver my pieces to my parents. And so then I went back towards the north. I said, well, I got to get back up in the woods and start to get more wood and stuff. And the funniest thing happened. I went across the Golden Gate Bridge, and supposedly someone had spotted me going across the Golden Gate Bridge with my truck. And so the chain of command was all the way up to the north. By the time I got 500 miles north, they're waiting for me. I says, what the heck? You know, I pull over and ask them. I said, what's going on? They said, well, we heard you coming. I says, heard from who? They said, well, they seen you coming across the bridge. And so already they're down there to start to bug me, you know, so there's already people showing up. I says, damn, you know, my reputation precedes me wherever I go now. I got to watch myself because, you know, who knows what they're actually up to. You know, these people are poor. They got nothing, you know.
What do they want from you?
Well, first of all, they just wanted to just be next to it. You know, they just want to see the guy that did these carvings and makes $10,000 a day. You know, by that time, it's up to $10,000. It's like, oh, my God. They think I'm like a celebrity. You know, so I got celebrity status. And then, you know, they're talking their crap back and forth on the phones. And one sister talks to another. And pretty soon they know I'm on my way up there. So some of them have gifts. And other ones want to get something from me. You know, some of them want to sell me wood. You know, whatever it is. You know, the poor people, to give you an idea, when I first got there, I says, hey, guys, where do you take a shower around here? You know, I'm asking Joe, the first guy that I meet. I says, Joe, where do you take a shower? He says, we stand on the creek. But you can't do it right now. The creek's too low because it's the middle of summertime. It's 90 degrees. He says, the creek's too low to get a shower right now. You have to wait.
Take me back. That was a great story about the creepy crawlers. Can you think of any other entrepreneurial ways you made money as an adolescent?
Because there's snow on the ground in Chicago. Always snow. I was at a grocery store. I look at some lady come out of the grocery store. She's pushing her cart full of groceries. And she goes off the curb and the cart will not move one inch in the snow. It just stops right there. There's no way you're going to go another inch, lady. So I go out to her, you know, being my dad's boy or whatever, you know, being a Marine's kid. I go out there and says, lady, you want me to help you carry those to the car? She says, sure, you know, God, I sure appreciate, you know, your being here or whatever. So I said, all right, I got my little boots on so I can walk through the snow. So I take her groceries, and they're heavy. I'm real young. I think I was probably about, though, maybe 8 at the time. And so I start walking her groceries out to her car, and I got to go back and get another bag. She takes one light bag, and she walks out there with her fancy shoes on. And we get out to the car. She shuts the door, shuts the trunk, and she turns to me, and she gives me some money. And I said, what's that for? She says, oh, that's for helping me out. I sure appreciate it. Here you go. So she gave me some money. I was 8 years old, and she handed me 100 pieces of candy. You know what I'm saying? It's like, cha-ching! I said, stand back. So I run back over to the door, and the next lady comes out. She stops with the car, and I says, lady, can I help you out to the car? Sure. So I'm out there all day long taking people to their cars. Some are giving me $5 bills, you know what I'm saying? I mean, they're thinking it's really helpful. Some are giving me $1. Most of them just give me $1, $2. So anyway, so I'm running back into position as fast as I can, and the manager sees me through the door to the store. He sees me outside doing this or whatever. He sees me carrying these groceries out to the car. So he goes out there. He says, hey, young man, can I talk to you for a minute? I said, sure. You know, he says, I just want to say thank you. I appreciate you doing that because it keeps my courtesy clerks from having to go out to the car. So you're actually helping me out by doing that. I says, really? And he says, yeah, you know, I seen you make a couple dollars. You're welcome to keep it. And I says, all right. You know, so I said, man, this is it. You know, so I go back. I'm standing in my position, you know, ready to help the next one out or whatever. Lo and behold, some bigger punk kids come along, and they see me doing my thing, and they said, wait a minute, he just put $1 in his pocket, you know, so they're standing right there, too. Hey, lady, can we help you out? You know, so I said, shit, you know. I go into the store manager and say, hey, mister, you know, I was out here first a few minutes ago. Now I got a bunch of big kids that are way bigger than me that can pound on me. I said, listen, I got these other kids out here, and they're taking my spot, you know. And he says, damn those kids, you know. So he runs outside, you know, he's got a broom in his hand or something. You kids, get out of here, you know. So he kicks them out or whatever, so now I have exclusive to it. He says, you can stand right there, you just do your thing. I says, all right, thank you, I appreciate it. So now I got exclusive rights to do it, you know, saying, but there's a big demand. More and more ladies are coming out and getting stuck. I can't keep up with the pace. So I go over to the kids that are scowling at me from off the property right there, and I said, listen, if you guys want, you can help me do the groceries, but I get to get half. Whatever you get, I'm taking half. And they says, okay, because there's a chance to make some money, you know. So they come back on, so now I got 5 kids working for me. And now I'm sitting on top of one of the mailbox dispensers, there's a big newspaper dispensers. I'm sitting on top of one of the machines, and I'm watching the kids go out to the car so I get a little vantage point. I can see if they're making 1 or 2 or 5 or what. So they come back, and I got my hand out. So now they're handing me money, and I'm just telling who's going next. Okay, you're next right there. You over there, take this next one. So I'm directing traffic, and it just so happens that I have in my possession a derby cap. So I got my derby cap on, you know, so it sets me apart from everybody else. You can tell. And for whatever reason, I found a cigar. I got my cigar and my derby cap, and I'm telling these guys what to do. And I'm feeling like when you watch the old movies where they have the guy that's he's a director, producer, or
yeah.
the guys that are running the show in the big newspaper room or whatever, you know, I got that look. So now I'm telling the kids what to do. You, pick it up over there. Where's my money from you, man? You didn't give me my money yet. So I'm already catching them holding out. I'm 8, you know, so these kids are 10. So they're way older than me, but I got control of the situation, and I'm running the show here. I think I even made one of them go away. I says, listen, that's the third time you kept money and didn't give it to me. You got to leave. And he says, you're going to I says, well, you know what? I'll go get the manager. You're going to be out of here, you know. So he walked away or whatever, you know. So I had to actually let one of them go. I'm actually firing kids at 8 years old.
Let's break that down. So, look, there's a lot of business lessons just in that story right there. Number one, you said I had control, and you got the control by getting an exclusive, by going in with the manager and saying, can I be the only one in control?
Yes, get permission. That's really important to do.
So you blocked all your competition, right?
Yes.
And then because of the exclusivity, you could control them.
Yes, and then also I seen that I wanted to be greedy and do it all myself, but I also seen there's no way I could keep up with the demand. And so I decided instead to go out and share with the other guys by splitting half and half of them. And it's true that I ended up making way more money by having 5 guys and getting half, rather than trying to do it all myself and only getting 1% of the customer. That was a big, important thing to do. And it also made it so I didn't have to do the labor. I could simply be in control and now tell these guys what to do, and I'm still making half of the cash. It was a great move.
We call that in our house like the Tom Sawyer method, painting the fence.
Exactly. Tom Sawyer them into it. But at the same time, I'm giving them money. They're making money. They have an opportunity where before there was none, and they're taking directions from me, which they don't like, but at the same time, it keeps them working. And I made it fair so that one of them didn't get to do the next one. The next one, they had to take turns.
All right, give me another story how you used exclusivity to make money, maybe in your young adolescence or even as a teenager or even as a young man.
I was 4 years old, and my parents wanted to keep an ear on me to tell where I was at. It's summertime. I had enough territory. I could go up and down in front of the street right here in front of us. It's a very busy street. You can't go across the street no matter what, Mike. And you could go up and down the sidewalk right here. It's all the way to one corner, all the way to the other corner on the city block. And so that my mom could stand right there at the bushes and see me down there, that I haven't stepped in the street, I haven't gone up to any houses, I'm up and down the sidewalk. And now I'm going back and forth and I'm doing things, being crazy, doing my usual. And they says, we can't really tell where he's at, so they gave me a wagon. My mother found an old wagon in the attic. It's an old Red Ryder wagon. You've heard of them. And I had my wagon. And she put a bunch of junk in the wagon so that it makes noise. I think she found some metal things or whatever. So now I was up and down the sidewalk. Every crack that I hit makes a noise because you can hear the wagon coming. Ding, 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 ding. You know, hear the rattle, rattle, rattle. You know, so I go down the street. So she can tell while she's hanging laundry out in the yard where I am. She could tell how far away I am. And she also knew to look when she didn't hear the noise. If the noise stops, he's in trouble. He's doing something, you know what I'm saying? So I remember I was playing in some bushes or, you know, playing with the neighbor's hedges or whatever, and she heard the wagon stop, so all of a sudden I hear her over the hedge, hey, come on, Mike, keep going, you know. So I, okay, so I get away from those bushes or whatever and keep on walking. One of the things in my youth or whatever, when I was 4 years old, my dad was a superintendent of buildings. He had many rentals that he was in control of, and so he had a huge ring of keys. And I was fascinated with the keys because they made that wonderful sound that sounded like money. So here's these keys or whatever, and I would find his keys in his drawer while he's sleeping or away or doing something. And I would take those keys out, and I also had the fascination to see if it opened up a lock. I'd stick it in the door and try to turn the key, and I broke one of them off. Snap, the key broke off inside the lock, you know. So I said, oh, shit, you know. So I knew I was in trouble for that, so I put the keys back in the drawer where they were supposed to be. And my dad comes in, and he sees the broken key. And he immediately looks to me and says, what have you been up to? He says, bullshit, you broke this key off of the lock. Show me which lock you broke it off. And obviously it could be an emergency. You might have to get in the door. There's a broken key in one of the doors. He wants to know where it's at, more important than punishing me. So I says, it's over here. You know, so I took him to the door lock, and he fished the key out of there. He had to reach in there with a wire to pull the half of the key broken off in there. And he got really mad because he says, that key is really important. I need that key. And now you broke it in half. So he's trying to express to me how important it was not to use the keys in the doors and break them off. So I was crying, you know, all pissed off and shit. So basically, he gets me my own keys. He takes a bunch of worthless keys that he doesn't use for anything anymore, and he put them on his own ring, and he says, here, you can have a ring too, but you can't put them in any of the keys in the house. You have to go somewhere else. And he says, and don't put them in no cars. He says, hey, take it down to the mailbox in the corner and see if it'll work in there. So immediately, I'm running down to the mailbox in the corner, and so I'm walking around trying to find things I can open up with my keys or whatever, and I can't find nothing. You know, my mom brought an old lock out or whatever, and I'm trying every key in the lock. Anyway, so long story short, I put the keys in the back of my wagon, and I'm going up and down the street making my noise. I got my keys, and I'm doing my thing. I'm 4 years old. And I says, you know, I wonder if the neighbors have any keys. My little wagon and I go up to one of the neighbor's doors, and I knock on the door. She answers the door. Mom's at home from work back in the 50s, and everybody didn't work, you know. So Mom comes to the door, and she says, hi, young man, what do you want? You know, I says, I was wondering if you have any keys. See, I got keys like this. Do you have any? Sure, just a minute. You know, so she goes back in the house, comes back out with a handful of keys, and I put them in my wagon, and I go to the next neighbor's house and the next neighbor's. And back in that time, all the keys were made out of brass. That's an important factor of the story. Brass or the old skeleton keys from the 1800s. You know what they look like, the skeleton keys that fit in old locks. So I got my keys, and I'm putting it on more and more rings. I found a pull chain that has a little clasp on it, and you can make a big necklace out of the pull chain full of rings. So I got my rings, and I got my pull chains going together, and I got my keys, and I'm going up and down, and I'm collecting for everywhere I can, and I go to every single house on the block, and I go back to my mom. I said, Mom, I was wondering, can I go around the corner down there just for a minute? And she says, for what? And I says, I want to get some keys from the neighbor's houses. And she says, what? And she looks up the street, and one of the ladies is out there in front of the house. She has her door wide open. I remember looking down at her, and she says, that's okay. He asked me for keys, and I gave some. Is that all right? He won't eat them or nothing? And she says, no, he doesn't eat them. It's okay. And she says, okay. So the lady goes back in the house, and I says, see, Mom, it's okay with them if I get keys. And she says, well, that's a pretty neat-looking collection there, you know. She says, all right, I'll let you go around the end of the block down there so you can get some keys, but don't go on the street. Don't do nothing wrong. I said, okay. You know, it's like, now I got the right to go around the block, because I took that as the right to go ahead and go around the block instead of just around the corner, you know. So I went all around the city block, and I went to every single door. Now I got a huge amount of keys. It must have been 100 keys or so. So anyway, I get back to the house. My mom comes out. She says, oh, my God, where'd you get all those keys? I says, everybody's giving them to me, Mom. They don't care. They don't mind if I take them. So I got the keys for years. I had them, collect them, and every chance I could, I'd ask people, even when they're walking down the sidewalk, I'd say, excuse me, sir, do you have any keys I can have? And they see I have a huge collection in my wagon and stuff. And so pretty soon, they say, you know what? I'll go home and get some. I'll be back on the way from work. I'll leave them right here on the door. I said, all right. So people are leaving keys on my doorstep now. You know, my parents are freaking out. Where the hell's all these keys come from? I have a dresser, my little three-drawer dresser in my bedroom, and I had so many keys in the top drawer that it collapsed. They're heavy, you know. The damn keys are heavy. It turned into a big block of empty drawers all the way to the bottom. So I filled it up with a little slit on top. I could just shove a key in there one after the other. So pretty soon I have the whole three-drawer cabinet full of keys from the top to the bottom, and my pops goes to pull out the drawer, and it won't come out. I says, it's keys, Pops. You can't open it. It's all full of keys. It's treasure, you know. I was like, ooh, I collect them up, and they're just like money. So it's a year later. By this time, my dad shows me how I could take a piece of steel wool, and I could make the key really shiny because they're brass. You could shine up. So I polished them up so they look like gold. To me, they're gold. You know, when you're 5 years old, they look like gold to me.
Yeah.
You know? So, and I'm a poor kid in a poor neighborhood. They don't know what the hell fucking gold is, you know. So I polished them up, and I think it's absolutely fascinating. You know, it's like another year I've collected up more keys. I got thousands of keys. You can't imagine the keys that I had. I had keys to mailboxes. I had keys to prisons. I had keys to castles, huge, giant keys. I said, what does that go to? And it says, oh, it's a castle gate I got in England when I was over there a few years ago. You could have it. I had amazing keys. I mean, I had keys that would fascinate you just to look at them. Even to this day, they're an amazing collection of keys. So then I turned 6 years old. I go from 4 to 6. I'm collecting keys for 2 years. I'm 6 years old, and I have now got the right to go off the city block. For the first time ever, I could cross at the crosswalk, and I could go further with my little wagon, and I could go collect keys off of other blocks. So that's exactly what I'm doing. And I found myself at the third block down from my house is a set of railroad tracks. It's a dangerous, perilous place that the kids go to play or whatever. I played on them for 10 years of my life out there in the railroad tracks on trains and shit like that. But I took my keys down there and I laid them on the rail. And the train would come by and smush them. And the train doing the Amtrak would go by doing 75 miles an hour. And they hit these keys and they make them flat as a pancake. And they fly off the rail usually, you know, so after the wheels hit them a few times. And so then I go and collect the keys up. Now they're smushed. They're even more fascinating than they were to begin with. It's a skeleton key that's all flattened out, like a piece of paper. And so then I take the keys and I bend them around a screwdriver and I can make them so that they're rings and they're bracelets. It's a key that's a bracelet. Now they're for sale. you want to buy a bracelet that's made from a key? It's really cool. It's all made out of brass, and it shines real pretty. So now I'm selling back to some of the same ladies that gave me the key to begin with. I'm selling them back bracelets and rings and stuff, and they're a hit. The people love them, you know, so they're lined up to buy these things. And I had them in my wagon. I had whole displays of different things that I made with the keys. And you can also, because I got money for the first time, you can lay out quarters on the railroad tracks and pennies and nickels and stuff. And when the train smushes them, it turns into a perfect bracelet of shiny pennies. You can imagine, that's a big hit too. They're part of my inventory. So I have quarters and nickels and dimes and pennies and stuff all smushed in. And they're all mercury head dimes and wheat back pennies and, you know, back in the day. And I polished them up with my little steel wool and made a beautiful bracelet made out of pennies, all the faces out of pennies. But it's all smushed. So people were loving the jewelry, you know. So they just love the idea. They love the jewelry. They think it's so cool that they're all fused together. And how did you make it? I says, well, I used a 30-ton train to make that one, you know. I waited for the Amtrak to come by to make this one right here, you know. They're like, oh my God, that's amazing. And I was walking down the street, and I had a big ring full of them around my neck. And some guy, I'm sure he was an antique dealer back in the day, and he says, hey, that's a pretty little necklace, young man. You want to sell it? And I said, sure. You know, so I sold it to him for $5, a bunch of keys on a necklace. So now I've got cash. You know, so I come back, I'm 6 years old, and I got more cash than I think my parents have. I got a couple $100. So my parents are seeing that. They're like, what the fuck did you get all that money? I said, I'm selling my keys. So he's taking it away. So I look over there. You know, he's taking money off the top of it so he could go buy groceries for my sisters. And I don't have a clue. You know, so I don't know what's going on. I keep getting my money shortened up every time. So I made a dream up at the time. People used to say, if you had 3 wishes, what would you wish for? And I says, all I want, because at the time I had the opportunity, I would do it myself, all I want is to be able to put in my pocket and pull out money anytime I need it. I don't care if it's a 5 or 10 or a $1 bill, as long as I can pull it out of there and it never ends. I wanted the endless pocket of money. So what I did, because my parents kept snatching up my money out of my pockets and everywhere else, they seen that they'd take it, you know. And so in my house, in my bedroom, next to my bed, there was a place where the floorboard that goes along the wall separated from the plaster wall a little bit. There's a little gap in between there. And I reached in there one time trying to find the bottom of it, and it went way down deep. It actually went into the basement, into some sort of crawl space right there. And what I did was I started shoving my money into that spot because I could reach in there with my little hand and pull money out, but my parents couldn't. So I shoved it in the wall right there, and to me, the magic came true that I wished for. I could reach in the wall at any given time and pull out money anytime I needed it. And there was things for kids to buy at the local hardware store, the toy store. There was candy. There was gumballs. I was fascinated with all of them. You know, I said, oh, my God, I got to get enough gumballs. And so I had a place to stash my money, and my parents couldn't find it. And it was just a gold mine to me. It was like, all right, I could put all the money I want in there. I didn't even know how much it was. You know, at 6 and 7 years old, I couldn't even count how much was in there. But it was enough in there that I could reach in there. And sometimes it was a 20. Sometimes it was a 10. Sometimes it's a 1, you know, but it was always a surprise to me. All right, it's a $10 bill, and off I'd go to spend money. So I also had this thing where I had routes, since I was able to accomplish the key route, you know, go to get keys off of people's doors, out of their houses and stuff. Now I would also look underneath machines for money, because I could drop down and put my face against the sidewalk, and I could see there's something shiny underneath this machine, whatever it was, vending machine out there on the outside. It was either they sold ice or they sold laundry mats, you know, had machines. And everywhere I looked, there was machines that you could dispense things out of, candy bars and stuff like that. But the people couldn't see underneath it. It was a very heavy machine. You couldn't move it, you know. So I'd take a coat hanger and I made it into a hook and I'd reach underneath the machines and I'd pull out the shiny thing. And at first, I was hoping it was keys, but it was money. Oh, wow, it's a quarter. You know, oh, wow, it's a dime. So pretty soon I had a route. I went on my route almost every other day, and I'd go to the machines and see what's underneath them. Oh, wow, this has got more underneath that one, you know. So I went around the machines, and I actually worked a deal with my mother, because one time she's in the laundromat, and she's short on quarters to make the machine go. She says, damn, hey, Mike, have you got any money in your pocket? I says, nah, I don't have any money, Ma, sorry. And she says, well, where can I get a couple quarters? I said, I know a way, Mom. If you push this machine back, I'll reach underneath there and pull out any money that's underneath there. She says, no way. And I says, watch, you'll see. So she leans one of the big washing machines back, and I reach underneath there and pull out a quarter. And I says, do it again on this one. You know, I can see something shiny. So she pulls it back, and I got a dime. So I walk around the laundromat, and I think I got like $2 or $3. And I said, you can have the 3 or 4 quarters you asked for, Mom, but I want the rest. So after a while, I had a route. I went from ice machine to different Coke machines, and it was actually a genuine route that I went on a daily basis, and I got money every single time I did it. So my money was endless at that point. I was making money at 7 years old that most kids only dreamed about. But anyway, it was all good stuff, man. I got ripped off for a bike when I was 7. My dad bought us brand new bikes or whatever. It was a big accomplishment for Christmas. He saved his money and got us all nice bikes. They probably cost about $100 a piece. And somebody came into our driveway and stole them all. They loaded up a truck and stole all of our bikes, you know, one time or whatever. So we're all miserable, crying and everything else. And so my dad says, well, I can't afford to get another one. I'm broke. I spent all my money on them first bikes. This is at a time when our house payment was $300 a month, the mortgage on the house. So he says, I can't get another one or whatever, Mike. I'm awful sorry. So I was determined to get my own. So I saved up enough money and bought my first bike by myself. It was better than the one I had ripped off. It was a Schwinn Varsity, you know, back in the day. So I bought my own stuff, my own clothes, my own bikes, my own everything. And my parents gave allowances to my sisters, but they never gave me an allowance. They says, well, you probably got more money than us. Forget it. You don't get one. When I was real young, I found out that there's such thing as a $250,000 bill. I read in a book or something where they had different denominations of bills back in the 40s and 50s where you could go down and buy a $5,000 bill. By the time I was about 10 years old, I says, I want one of those bills. I see 100, I have 100, and I want the next biggest bill. What's the next biggest bill? I'm asking at the bank. And they said, well, the next one's $5,000. I says, well, it's going to take a while to save that. But I saved my money when I was 9, 10, maybe 11 years old, and I saved up $5,000. And I went down to the bank. I wanted to buy one of those bills. That was my whole objective. I saved for years just to try to get enough to buy one of those $5,000 bills. So I go down to the bank, and I says, okay, I'm ready. I want to buy one of those bills. And they said, what bill? And I says, I want one of those $5,000 bills. And I says, son, they haven't made those since the 50s. They stopped making them. I said, what? You know, I was absolutely heartbroken. And I was like, what are you talking about? They told me they have $5,000. No, they stopped doing that. And the reason they stopped is because people would launder money. To me, I was so heartbroken that I couldn't get a $5,000 bill. So instead, my dad talks to me and says, why don't you put it in the bank? I said, what for? He says, they got this thing called interest. Your money will grow while you do nothing. I says, what are you talking about? He showed me my first bank account that I can make money. I think at the time it was like maybe 5 or 7% or something. It was good money. So my $5,000 bill earned me money while I wasn't even doing nothing with it. So to me, that was the answer. I says, oh man, I can make money off of doing nothing and still do my routes and still do all those different things I was doing, you know. And at the time it was a paper route too. I had to have a paper route. And I learned from one of the other kids that had a paper route because we all meet at the same place in the morning and the kid's crying about something. I says, what's up, man? What's wrong? And as we're rolling up papers, we used to have to roll them up and put a rubber band on each one, you know. So we had a little system for doing that. So after a while, I paid my sisters to roll them up and put rubber bands on it so I wouldn't have to do it because I had to do so many of them. I gave them money to sit there and put the rubber bands on. And I remember we were in that little circle doing that, and one kid's kind of crying or whatever. He says, oh, man, I went to collect, and I can't get the money from this guy. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, he gets the paper every day, and he won't pay me the $5 he owes me. I said, what's his address? Where's the, I'll go get it, you know. So after a while, I would be the collector for other kids' paper routes. That I didn't have any inhibitions whatsoever. My daddy, what he taught me when I was a kid, because he's a Marine DI, is we're in a place having hamburgers one time, and I said, Dad, I'm out of ketchup. He says, go up and ask that guy for ketchup. Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. He says, listen, go up and ask that guy for some ketchup. I'm not going to get off my ass to go do it. You got to go do it. And I says, there's no way, Pops, and I don't want to do it. He says, listen, here's the deal. If you don't go up and get that ketchup from that guy, I'm going to paddle your ass right now in front of a whole crowd of people. So I went up there and asked for ketchup. Mr. Guy, some ketchup. And I turn around, he's laughing back there at the table, and the guy gives me ketchup. And I said, got some more? Yeah, sure. You know, so I learned at about 3 or 4 years old to go up and ask for ketchup. You know, don't be embarrassed or inhibited because my pops will pat on my ass if I don't. So I learned from that point on that you can go ask people for things and they're not going to hurt you. But if I didn't do it, my dad would hurt me. So I did. You know, I went up and I started collecting for people, and I had no inhibitions whatsoever. I'd go right up to their door and say, look, you owe $5 for this paper out, and I'm here to collect for it. And they'd say, oh, come back. I said, fuck that next week. Pay me right now, or I'm going to get my Marine dad to come lean on your ass, you know, so they pay, you know. So I go back and give the kid their money, but I got a percentage for doing it. I'd keep a dollar for every $5 I collected for those guys or something, and they accepted that because they couldn't get it out of the guy. You can't be afraid for asking for something because it's worse than not ask for it, whatever it is. And even to this day, just yesterday, I met a girl that couldn't ask for things. I said, look, you got to go ask. And you're not going to get it if you don't ask for it, and it's not going to happen just by chance. Nobody's going to come along and say, hey, you look like you need money. Here you go. You got to go ask. The worst that's going to happen is they're going to say no. Just like any sale, the worst thing that somebody's going to do is say no. They're not going to beat you up or throw you down to the ground. So I learned a long time ago to ask for the sale, you know, close the deal, make it happen.
That's absolutely right. That's great advice. Give me a little entrepreneurial story.
One day I'm going along, I'm an adult, I'm probably 16 or 17, you know, I'm getting to that age where I'm out on my own, doing my own thing, on my bikes, not quite driving yet, so I don't have a car. But I meet up with a guy, and he's from Florida, and he's also on a bike, he's bigger than me, older than me, and he's tougher, he's a big guy. He says, Mike, you want to make some money? I says, is it legal? He says, yes. I says, do I have to work real hard? Because I tried raking leaves, and that's a backbreaker. I tried mowing lawns, that's a backbreaker. And there's never no end to mowing a lawn. When you mow somebody's lawn, I go up and I say, okay, you owe me $15. That was the agreed upon price. Yeah, but you didn't edge it. I said, what do you mean edge? Well, you didn't cut the edge right along the sidewalk right here. So I'd cut the damn edge, and I go back, okay, you owe me $15. Well, you didn't do the bush. I says, oh, man, this is bullshit. You know, they never end. Landscaping never ends. The people always have one more little thing that you got to do to get your money. So I said, this isn't for me. So I says, okay, so this guy's asked me, I says, is it labor intensive? Am I going to wear myself out doing it? No, no, it's real simple. It's easy. It's clean. You won't have a problem with it. Come with me, and I'll show you how to make some money. So I said, okay, where do we have to go? He says, we have to go to Portland, which is 5 miles away from my house. It was kind of a long ride, but I says, okay, I'll do it. So we go to Portland, and he takes me to a truck stop, the first truck stop I've ever seen in my life. And it's a place called Jubitz Truck Stop. You should look it up one time. It's the biggest truck stop in west of the Mississippi.
How do you spell it?
Jubitz, J-U-B-I-T-S or something, Jubitz. So at the time, there was thousands of trucks out on this huge lot, and the guys come from miles around, and they trade loads. They take away trailers and put new trailers on, and it's a big truck stop. You know, they have hotels and showers and things you could buy for the truck. You know, they have gift shops and all sorts of shit. Of course, they have fuel and oil and all the different things you need for the rig. So the guys pull in there, and they get their fuel tanks filled up, which is thousands of dollars. You know, even back then, even back in the time we were doing it, it was still $500 or $600 to fill up those huge fuel tanks. Anyway, so we're at the fuel station, you know, we're on the pumps. And this guy, he says, come here, I'm going to show you something. So he goes up to one of the truckers, and he says, hey, trucker, is there any way we could put some wax on your mural? And what he meant is on the back of a big cab, when you have a trailer on a truck, they're together. But when you take the trailer away, they call it a bobcat. You know, when you just have the front tractor without the trailer. And on the back of the bobcats, on the back of these big truck motors, are huge, giant murals that the guys have painted on the back of that. Most of them are nude. Most of them are women reclining or something. And a lot of them are giant eagles, big flags, you know, different things that they have airbrushed on the back of the cab that shows that they're different than all the other truckers.
But you can't see it when there's a trailer on there.
Right, right. So they put a lot of X-rated material up there. But when they're bobcatting away, they're showing off, just like a guy that has a big Harley Davidson or something. They got their women with their boobs in the back. They're showing off to all the guys. Look what I got. You know, said I'm bad. And the murals cost $500, maybe $1,000, maybe even $2,000 or $3,000, depending on the detail, who did it, what artist. It's like a tattoo. Each one's individual, and they're airbrushed on the back of the truck, and they're real important to the driver. They all love them. At the time, there was no such thing as leased trucks. They're all owned by independent wildcatters, they call them. The big truck drivers own their own rig, and then they take the trailers that were leased, and they would move the trailer from one side of the country to the other, whatever they're going to do. So the guy says, can we do your mural for you? Because he did have a trailer on there. I could see the mural. And he says, here's what you do, Mike. You go up on this ladder, and they had a ladder so that you could climb up to wash your windows and stuff, and we borrowed the ladder from the truck stop, and we go up on the ladder, and you put wax on her, just regular turtle wax onto the mural, and then wipe it off, and it's real shiny, and it's polished, and it's covered with wax, and it's protected, you know? And so then he turns to the driver and says, there you go, driver, and the driver gave him $40. He said, here you go. And
so all you're doing is cleaning up their art.
Yeah, cleaning up their art without taking it off.
Did the truckers all know about that?
They called us a glad hand because we're able to climb up in there and we could use our hands. And they can't. You know, they're tired. It's a big truck. They can't get in there to do it. And we can stand on what's called the fifth wheel and reach up there and just do it with a little rag. This partner of mine, and he's bigger than me, so he did the top. I did the bottom, and pretty soon we're done. And we split the money 50-50. So he gives me $20. He says, you want to do another one? And I says, hell yeah. So we run up to another trucker. Hey, can we do your mural? No. You know, I got no money. Says, okay, so we run up to another one. Can we do your mural? Says, you ask those guys, I'll ask these guys. And pretty soon we're locked in. I said, hey, I got one over here. So they come running over and we do it. You know, got one over here. So now we're waxing murals and we're making good money, $200 a piece, $400 a day. So I said, man, there's the easiest money I ever made. I said, this is great. Thanks, man. He says, he's got his money. He's counting his $200, whatever. I got my $200. He says, you want to do it tomorrow? I says, hell yeah. So we gather together about $600 a piece in 2 days, one weekend.
She'll be coming around the corner, and we just finished part four of our exclusive interview with Mike, the garage sale guy. Please continue to part five.